Anthony Davis, the brow himself, to the Lakers? What's next? Did the Pelicans VP of basketball operations, David Griffin, fleece the Los Angeles Lakers? Brooks Koepka was denied his historic three-peat at the U.S. Open by a former Division II hoops player. Plus, much, much more on today, Monday, June 17th, 2019. Here's the next pitch. There's a shot into right center. That's going to drop in for a base hit. Ohtani will make a turn and stop at first base, and he is just hit for the cycle. He did it on a two-strike pitch. Shohei Ohtani, the first Japanese-born player to ever hit for the cycle in a major league game.
The 3-2, swinging a line drive up the middle, base hit, one run scores, two runs will score, a huge hit for Vasquez, then a huge at bat, he battled and battled and battled, and two more runs in, it's 8-3. The stretch by Trevino, and the pitch to Seager. Swung on, line drive, base hit fair down the right field line. Here comes Crawford. Santana rounding third. He will score. Around to third goes Vogie. Kyle Seager in at second with a two-run double. The Mariners have the lead, 4-3 over the A's.
Good afternoon. Great to be with you here on the Jordy Holtberg Show. I'm your guest host, Raymond Parch III, filling in for Uncle Jordy today. We got a big show for you lined up in the next 2 hours. We'll be talking plenty of Anthony Davis being traded to the Los Angeles Lakers. We'll also touch on the U.S. Open, how a former basketball star in college turned journeyman golfer recorded his first major victory. And also a former LSU Tiger with the last name of Nola making his Major League Baseball debut in grand fashion with a base hit. But let's get to the top topic of today, or let's be honest, the entire weekend bleeding into today is the Anthony Davis trade to the Los Angeles Lakers that occurred over the weekend. There had been speculation that David Griffin, the VP of basketball operations for the New Orleans Pelicans, would get a deal done as soon as possible before the draft, and sure enough, that's what happened. Reports came out that they approached the Boston Celtics. There were some negotiations there between the Pels and the Celtics, but the Celtics, after losing Kyrie Irving, were not going to give up Jason Tatum, the most valuable asset that they had. And as soon as they did that, the Pels turned their attentions to the Lakers and sure enough got a king's ransom for the six-time All-Star. The brow heads to La La Land to be paired up with LeBron James. But before everyone anoints the Los Angeles Lakers as your 2020 Western Conference champions and possible NBA champions, let's pump the brakes here. Because the structure of this trade and the timing of it directly affects the Lakers' ability to be able to actually put together a championship squad. Tops on the list. They have no depth. None. To get Anthony Davis, they traded two of their guards, Lonzo Ball and Josh Hart. And I'm very high on Josh Hart. A lot of people that pay attention to the league are. I think he's going to flourish in a different environment. He's a very good two-way player. And he's been kind of overlooked in Los Angeles. But we'll dive more into that here in a moment. So the Lakers sent Lonzo Ball, Josh Hart, and forward Brandon Ingram to the Pels for Anthony Davis. In addition, they sent not one, not two, but three first-round draft picks. And here's the interesting part. That includes the number four pick on Thursday night. You understand why the Lakers make this deal. This is the same franchise that went out and pursued Shaquille O'Neal. to leave the Orlando Magic to sign with them. This is the same franchise that got Wilt Chamberlain away from another team. This is the same franchise that traded for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar from the Milwaukee Bucks back in the day. We understand that this is a glory franchise in the NBA that's coming off six very humbling consecutive seasons out of the playoffs. But they gave up a ton. Yes, you have LeBron James, who's on the wrong side of 30. You have Anthony Davis in his prime, a player that's never played a full season, by the way, due to health. Those are two top 10 players in the league right now. One's a top five. You can maybe make the argument that both are top five guys or have been in the last few years. But as it stands right now, they don't have the cap space freed up to sign another max player, whether that's Kemba Walker or Kyrie Irving or Jimmy Butler or whoever it may be. They don't have the room because here's the thing. The trade cannot be completed before July 6th when the new salary cap year begins in the NBA and confirmed by people with knowledge of the deal. That's when it's going to go down, and that's when the Pels want the deal to go down. And because of that date, ladies and gentlemen, the Lakers will have less cap space to sign someone. Now, maybe they can be helped out if Anthony Davis waives his trade bonus, and that'll help free them up to maybe have enough cap space to sign another max free agent. But as it stands right now, they can't do that. So they have LeBron James, they have Anthony Davis, they have Kyle Kuzman, and let's say they sign a max free agent, any of those guys that I mentioned. There's several players that are going to be out there available in free agency. Take away Kevin Durant, take away Klay Thompson, those guys more than likely will sign with the Golden State Warriors coming off the injuries. So what does this leave? Well, how are they going to have any depth? We just saw in the NBA Finals that wrapped up last week in which the Toronto Raptors defeated the Golden State Warriors because they had better depth. They actually had second-team players coming in off the bench that could score, that could defend and play. Golden State didn't have that, and they lost the championship because of that. How in the world are the Lakers going to be able to piece together a team around? Are you telling me that LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Kyle Kuzman, and another max free agent, and if they decide to bring back Rajon Rondo, Lance Stevenson, and JaVale McGee, you're telling me that's an NBA Finals team? No. And here's the other component of this. And I give immense accolades to David Griffin. This is what Griff pulled off. Not only did he get three players under the age of 23, he got three picks. And also on top of that, he has all the flexibility. He controls how those picks pan out for the Pels. And this is why. Because they're going to be allowed to trade off. They're unconditional. They're not protected. These are not protected picks. So if the Lakers are mediocre, or if, let's say, they get into the lottery, the Pels will benefit. If the Pels don't like where that draft pick is, guess what? They can decide to trade until the next year and take the pick the next year instead. So the Lakers, to get Anthony Davis, they gave up three players under the age of 23 years old, three first-round picks, and are allowing another team in the New Orleans Pelicans to control their destiny on how their draft picks are utilized between now and 2025. All to get the brow. That's what the Pelicans just did. That's what the Lakers just gave up. And that is just stunning. That's how desperate the Lakers were to get Anthony Davis. After everything that occurred, all the back and forth, all the bad blood between the Lakers and the Pels, it ends up the best deal for the Pelicans in regards of the Anthony Davis trade was actually dealing him to the Los Angeles Lakers. And they got the better end of this deal. Yes, the Lakers get a six-time NBA All-Star, a perennial All-NBA player, a guy that's been in the MVP conversation, seriously in the conversation, multiple years. But as we've seen year in and year out, in the NBA. You need more than the big three. Those Miami Heat teams, everyone focused on the big three, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, LeBron James. But they had a slew of bench guys that came in and did dirty work and gave them production to help them win those championships. Ray Allen, Mike Miller, the Birdman, Mario Chalmers. Okay, Haslam. They had depth because Pat Riley knew how to build a bench and knew that if you're going to win a championship, not only did you have to have the star power out on the court, you also had to have a plethora of depth. The Heat did that. The San Antonio Spurs have always done that, having guys coming in off the bench to be able just to continue to lead the team. The Toronto Raptors just showed you how this is done. The Cleveland Cavaliers, when they beat the Golden State Warriors, they had depth on that team. The Golden State Warriors, in winning three of the last five NBA championships, did so because they had depth. The Lakers are banking on LeBron James and Anthony Davis and one other guy with Kyle Kuzman to be enough to win a championship and to overcome all the depth and everything like that. Everyone wants the Lakers to be great. That's why you see a lot of the national media saying, this is a great trade. This is a great trade for the Lakers. The Lakers are back. Oh, they're going to be the odds-on favorites to win the NBA championship next year. Pump the brakes. Slow your roll. This is not how the modern NBA works. It hasn't for 20-some-odd years. You have to have the star power, and you have to have the depth. If you don't, it's not going to work. It just isn't. Once again, this is from Woj, who dropped the Woj bombs over the weekend concerning the Pelicans-Lakers trade. If the Pelicans and Lakers had waited until July 30th to complete the trade, the Lakers could have had $32.5 million in cap space, enough to pursue a max-level free agent. By waiting the 30 days, the Lakers would be acting like a team over the cap and thus allowed to use the fourth overall pick in the draft as salary. Okay, that makes sense, right? Is that what they did? No, because David Griffin fleeced him. The trade is going to be completed by July 6th. Assuming Davis declines to void the $4 million trade bonus, that leaves the Lakers with just $23.7 million in cap space. Which means, if they do get another star, that other star is going to have to take less money, or they're going to have LeBron redo his contract to make less money. So they put themselves in a corner. And big up to David Griffin for taking Rob Pelinka to town, because the former longtime agent and confidant of Kobe Bryant got schooled here a little bit. Yeah, he got the bigger name, and he got the name that's going to excite the Lakers fan base. But they got LeBron James last year that excited the fan base too, and how'd that work out? David Griffin is building something. He's not looking at an easy fix. He's looking at this as a situation where he can lay a foundation. He's going to take Zion Williamson. Reports are coming out, courtesy of Andrew Lopez and others in the New Orleans media market, that the Pels are going to start shopping the number four pick overall, that they're not done. Other moves are going to be on the way. Trading Solomon Hill, getting his contract off the books. Julius Randle has decided to decline his option. He's going to test free agency. Can't be mad at Julius Randle for doing that. He's trying to get himself a payday, but don't be surprised if they find a way to bring him back. But you're going to have Drew Holiday. Let's say they don't trade any of the Laker assets. Let's say it's Lonzo Ball at the number one. Let's say it's Drew Holiday at the two. Let's say Josh Hart is your rotational guy for both of those guys because he can play both the one and the two. Ingram still has not lived up to his potential. He can be your three. Zion's your four. Now you got to deal with depth. Maybe get you a shooting five, maybe one of the Lopez brothers that can get you points down low. That's a playoff team. And that's not counting the other picks. And if they take the number four overall pick, which multiple media reports are indicating that they will, and shop that, maybe they take that and pair it with Solomon Hill and trade it to someone. There's already been talk that the Atlanta Hawks, who have not one but two picks in the first round this year, are interested in trading up to the number four pick. Can the Pels and David Griffin flip that, take that number four pick, and get a veteran player, a youngish player, maybe under age of 30, that's a veteran presence, and pick up picks too? Well, now they're even winning even more. Remember, David Griffin is the man who served as the general manager of the Cleveland Cavaliers when they were able to bring back LeBron James. Part of that reason was because LeBron wanted to go home. Another factor in that is because LeBron trusted David Griffin. He has an immense amount of respect for Griff. And what was one of the first moves Griff made when he was the GM of the Cleveland Cavaliers? He traded Andrew Wiggins out of Kansas, Canada's own, and flipped him to the Minnesota Timberwolves to get Kevin Love. And they created a big three of Kevin Love, Kyrie Irving, and LeBron James. Now, can Griff, with the number 4 overall pick in this draft, because a lot of experts will tell you there's a big drop-off from the top 3 down to the next tier, probably not going to get you a Kevin Love type, but can you get you maybe a starter, a big man, or maybe someone else that can provide depth with that number 4 overall pick? Hell yeah. The Pels are not done. The Pels are not done. And yes, this may benefit the Lakers by getting AD, and they can team him up, the Brow and LeBron James and La La Land, and good for them. And look, when the Lakers are good, it's good for the league. Ratings are always up, so forth and so forth. That said, this is also a really good deal for the New Orleans Pelicans because they also control the Lakers' draft picks. They got 3 first-round picks and 3 players, and they're not done yet. So tremendous haul for David Griffin in the New Orleans Pelicans. We want to hear from you. We got to hit a break, but please call the Arco Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Call us up here on the Jordy Holberg Show. I'm guest host Raymond Parse III. We'll talk more Anthony Davis trade after this break right here on 103.7 The Game.
Topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Holtberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back to the Jordy Holtberg Show here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live today from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. I'm your guest host, the Bald Bomber, Raymond Parse III. Let's welcome in today, because I just dominated the whole first segment of today's show, because I was just so excited about talking more about the Anthony Davis trade situation. Let's bring on the producer extraordinaire, the man who makes the ship not sink.
Yeah.
The one and only, the world-famous CD. Clint, how are you doing today,
I'm doing good, my brother. What's up with you, man?
I feel very comfortable at this desk.
I can about imagine. I mean, you were here for 3 hours. I can only imagine if this was a Tuesday after Chip Shots with Rob Spires. I don't think you would have ever left that spot.
I would have just taken a nap right there.
Hashtag sports nap.
Hashtag sports nap.
Just like you did on Friday. I mean, this is kind of a... Outside of the realm of sports, but you know,
is there a possibility that I took a short nap in my car?
Yes, yes.
That did occur on Friday. Thank you, Clint.
Yeah,
I want to get your thoughts, big man. Look, the news broke over the weekend.
Of course, happens right after my show ends.
Of course, Anthony Davis traded. They get 3 players back: Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, Josh Hart, all under the age of 23.
Yeah,
they get 3 picks, and they get to control what those picks are in the future. Essentially, controlling what the Lakers do in their own draft from all the way up to possibly 2025. Your thoughts on what David Griffin and the Pelicans front office did with Anthony Davis?
I think they nailed it. I think you brought up the fact they control their destiny, they control their fate in the draft. When you look at the Los Angeles Lakers, basically what the Pelicans have now is all the control in the world of what happens post LeBron James. When you look at the New Orleans Pelicans and what they got in that trade, just a treasure trove of picks, and apparently there might be more. We'll find out the full deets after July 6th, more likely than not, but apparently I was reading the kind of same stuff you were, that there might be more coming with
right.
this.
Right, if there's a scenario out there, let's say if the Lakers realize that they're kind of screwed on the salary cap,
yeah,
right, and they come back to the Pels and they're like, look, can we push the trade not going through until July 30th? That would allow us to free up more cap space so we can do something. Well, if you're the Pels, A, you don't have to do that.
Yeah.
But B, you could be the Pels and you could be like, okay, we can make that happen. Why don't you throw in Kyle Kuzma now?
Exactly.
Like, they're at a position of power because of what they've done there. And, you know, if I'm the Lakers, they're going to have to finagle some things. Here's something else interesting.
Okay.
World famous. And I saw this. Apparently, Bradley Beal, yes. Washington Wizards, a guy that's an all-star caliber type of player. Young, under the age of 30 player. Apparently, the Wizards are trying to do a rebuild. They got John Wall coming off the injury, but he's under that massive contract, so they can't get out of it.
Yeah, they're screwed with him.
But they can trade Beal.
And I think they should.
And I've heard some talk about Bradley Beal coming to New Orleans. Now, let me ask you this. What if you can trade Lonzo Ball and that number 4 overall pick to the Washington Wizards and get Bradley Beal in return? And now you got Bradley Beal, Drew Holiday, Brandon Ingram,
yeah,
and Zion Williamson.
I think technically this is a 3-for-1 deal, Raymond, because not only are you getting rid of Lonzo Ball, you're also getting rid of LaVar Ball.
Oh, he willed it into existence.
He willed it into existence, but he kind of did it like very much after the fact. Oh, hey, you know, he willed it into existence. He always wanted to go to New Orleans by saying he didn't want to go to New Orleans.
I will say this. We give LaVar Ball hell, rightfully so. The good brother, Ben Love, who will be following
the Jordy Holbrook show.
The Jordy Holbrook show with the Bald Bomber guest host. When Ben takes over, you know, he's probably going to throw some shade, I would assume, not to spoil the surprise here. He's thrown plenty of shade at LaVar over the years, deservedly so.
Well, I think that's basically how the whole segment started.
Was because of LaVar Ball.
Yeah.
That said, New Orleans loves characters like this, right?
Yeah.
They loved Rob Ryan. They love other guys. You and I have talked about this. This is someone who New Orleans would embrace because he's such an outlandish character. And I could see him taking part in a second line just because it's LaVar Ball.
Yeah.
And I actually think Lonzo Ball could do well playing alongside someone like Drew Holiday.
I think he could. I think anybody could, because I think Drew
Holiday. And coached by Alvin Gentry.
Exactly, because I feel like they'd all work well in that system that Alvin Gentry has with a lot of young guys.
And he's a pass-first kind of point guard as it is.
Exactly.
So he's an unselfish player.
Yep. I think it would work well, but it's just you got to – and you're talking about Rob Ryan and how like everybody loved him. I think it helped with the fact that he bought everybody drinks at the bar after he won his first game as the defensive coordinator. So that kind of helped a lot.
Nice. Yes. So, look, I'll be interested to see what happens. I want to know what some other moves are going to be happening with the Pels. They're just getting started. A lot of the reports have that happening, that they're just getting started. They're going to be making some bigger moves, some more moves. Man, if they could get someone like Bradley Beal, that would knock it out of the park, because then that changes the whole dynamic of this team, and they go from just a good team to possibly a playoff team. We got to hit a break. But when we come back here on the Jordy Holtberg Show with guest host Raymond Parsa III, let's talk a little U.S. Open. Upset City. Out of nowhere. Cinderella story there at Pebble Beach over the weekend. We'll talk about it right here on 103.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Holtberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
I don't think my game's where it needs to be, but it's getting there. Becoming a more complete player, I have more shots. I can rely more on my putting now. I can rely on my short game. Things I couldn't do even last year. And becoming a more complete player, and I can play different golf courses. I mean, people growing up said U.S. Open wouldn't suit me because I'm a long hitter, I'm a bomber. You know, went out and improved. I think to everybody else, what I always believe that I'm pretty good.
Welcome back to the Jordy Holtberg Show with guest host Raymond Parts III right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios today, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can give us a call if you'd like on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Phone lines are open. 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. That, ladies and gentlemen, speaking just now as we came out of the break, was the one and only Gary Woodland, the pride of Topeka, Kansas. He is your U.S. Open champion. He held off a surging Brooks Koepka, the back-to-back U.S. champion who was trying to become the first three-peat champion of the most prestigious golf tournament in the United States. First time that would have happened since 1905. But despite Koepka shooting 3-under on the final round on Sunday, Woodland did just enough, shot 2-under. The course there at Pebble Beach was did not play like a U.S. Open course the first couple days. Remember, Ricky Fowler shot 5-under on day one. Justin Rose was your first-round leader after shooting a 6-under par. And it was like, wow, they're going to put up some record numbers across the board. But as the weekend progressed, the course became more unforgiving and wreaked havoc on the golfers. But Woodland still managed to be steady throughout, shot well, 2-under par on Sunday to shoot 13-under, which, by the way, was better than Tiger Woods' historic win there at Pebble Beach in the U.S. Open all those years ago. It didn't feel that way. It didn't feel like Tiger's win when you're watching it over the weekend. But, man, he put up some good golf. I mean, he just did. He was just solid and played good and put up good numbers. Koepka finishes second at 10-under par for the tournament. And then some other guys worthy of note. John Rahm there was tied for third at 7-under. Justin Rose, he fell back. He was plus 3 on Sunday alone. He finishes tied for third. Adam Scott tied for seventh. Rory McIlroy was over par on Sunday as well. Prevented him from having an opportunity to win another major championship. He was tied for ninth. Webb Simpson had the best day of anyone on Sunday, minus 5 on Sunday. That put him in tied for 16th, but that only made him 3-under for the whole tournament. Jason Day, who had Stevie Williams, Tiger's former caddy, on the bag, he shot 2-under on Sunday to finish 2-under for the whole tournament. So you see, you know, most of these scores are typical U.S. Open scores, right? 2-under par, 3-under par, 4-under par. That usually helps win you the tournament. Tiger Woods really wasn't a factor at all. He made the cut, unlike he did at the PGA Championship, but he still finished outside the top 20, tied for 21st at 2-under for the tournament. I want to take a moment, though, to talk about Patrick Reed, because he had himself a Patrick Reed moment there at Pebble Beach over the weekend. He decided to do his best Bo Jackson impression, took his club and smashed it over his knee like the Incredible Hulk.
That was amazing.
That was pretty phenomenal. And he had himself a little bit of a meltdown. My favorite part, though, Clint, and you and I were talking about it during the break, is that the caddy just picked up the clubs and just held them. Just was like, yeah, this happens. Like this happens all the time.
It's like the fifth club he's broken this year. Not just on tour, but just at the driving range. You know, he'll shank one to the right and hit somebody in the head, and then just he'll break the club and then just hand him the next driver.
I wonder how many clubs he breaks during practice rounds when there's no cameras around and he's just destroying the course, knocks over his golf cart. I can just see Patrick Reed doing that, just yelling at the hole like Happy Gilmore. Why won't you get in the hole?
That's your home. I think that I was surprised like Rory at one point just wasn't like that, because he had like so many moments late in like the final round where he was just missing these really, really easy putts.
He missed easy putts. You know, it was one of those things, and this is not to take away from the former D2 scholarship college basketball player who gave up college basketball at the D2 level to go on a golf scholarship to the University of Kansas, Rock Hawk Jayhawk. Okay. And he's become a journeyman. He's 35 years old. He finally broke through, won a major. He's won a couple of tournaments on the PGA Tour. He's a good quality golfer. He got himself his major win. That's great. But there was a lot of curious things that occurred over the weekend, and this usually happens in a major. Koepka was not great. He had moments, but you thought maybe he could push. He seemed like he was going to push T to get into the mix, and there he was. He finished second. Rory, who we thought had fixed his Sunday troubles after playing lights out at the RBC Canadian Open the week before, he won that tournament. He was over par on Sunday. Jordan Spieth was awful. Just awful. He finished way down on the leaderboard. Had an awful weekend. And what the hell happened to Ricky Fowler? Ricky was 5 under par after day one. He finished over par for the whole tournament. And apparently he's growing a mullet. I have multiple questions on what's going on with Ricky Fowler. Why can't he be consistent for all four rounds in a major? And why the hell is he growing a mullet?
Maybe he's becoming Mike Gundy slowly.
Maybe he wants to hang out with Jason Duffner, who rocks the mullet.
Yes.
The modern mullet. We're not talking like Billy Ray Cyrus. Old school mullet. No, we're talking the new mullet.
Like Mike Gundy mullet?
Oh, the Mike Gundy mullet is something.
Oh, it's resplendent. Like, if we're talking all-time mullets, I think that one is right there. He's a man. He's a little over 50, and it's amazing.
Ricky Fowler finished tied for 43rd, Clint. 2 over par. He was 5 under on Thursday.
It's weird to see what was going on with him. Just a complete meltdown. It was because, especially when you consider what was going on Saturday, because Saturday was like when everything almost like really started hitting the fan for everybody. Everybody was just starting to just find the hole with the greatest of ease. It was just that was the coolest stuff, seeing it on Saturday night as you started getting towards the end of the final groups. Everybody just came alive.
Yeah, and Saturday's moving day in golf. Okay, and look, the U.S. Open, Pebble Beach lived up to its reputation and lived up to being a U.S. Open venue by making it extremely difficult. I mean, Justin Thomas didn't make the cut. Okay, there's a lot of guys that didn't make the cut. David Toms, former major champion in the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame, did not make the cut. Tony Finau did not make the cut. They had a lot of guys, Mike Weir, a lot of big names did not make the cut. And those that did, Clint, did not necessarily have a good go of it. Jordan Spieth finished tied for 65th.
That was another unusual one, because
plus six.
Feels like Spieth's been in a bit of a slump for a while.
I thought he had turned a corner. He looked better, but man, he was just bad from start to finish over the weekend. And Ricky, you know, he has the reputation of being the best golfer in the world, not to win a major. He's got the fan base. He's got the looks. He's got the endorsement deals. He has the game. When you watch him play, it is beautiful to watch from time to time. But he just can't get it together. He shot a 66 on the first day. He actually led for most of the first day until Justin Rose came into the clubhouse with the 65. He's charismatic. And then he just fell backwards at a course that really kind of suits himself. 66 on day one, and then he shot a 77 on Friday.
Just crazy.
That's an 11-stroke swing in the other direction.
Yeah.
It's just like, wow. It's just, don't know about Ricky. Is it going to happen for him? But Woodland is your U.S. Open champion. Congratulations to him. Job well done, obviously. Koepka, ooh, he's right there lurking. Look, Pebble Beach did not suit his game. He's a bomber.
Yep.
The conditions were difficult. You had to not use your driver in a lot of spots there at Pebble Beach because of the way the layout is, because you can't really expand Pebble Beach based on everything else that's going around the golf course. But, and I know people have said that the Open Championship in Great Britain, which is going to wrap up the four majors this year after the scheduling change, making the PGA Championship go from number 4 to number 2 in the lineup, doesn't really suit his game. But this guy is playing at an high level. He finished second at the Masters. He won the PGA, and now he's finished second at the U.S. Yeah. Open. Is there a better golfer in the world right now? I don't think so. And he lost, but I'm looking at him like, well, yeah, Koepka, you know, he's still the best.
Oh, I think he's still the best without a doubt because of the fact that he's got such a great track record all the way around what you've seen from him in the U.S. Open the last 3 years, coming up just a couple strokes short. And I feel like, you know, he definitely had every chance in the world, just couldn't necessarily capitalize. And out of the fact you have, like, your boy Gary Woodland have, like, the game of his life, it's amazing. And I'll go into when we do hot topics, I'll go into the top of the hour what I really want to get into about who would you have rather won. But, of course, like I said, just phenomenal stuff all the way around this weekend with the U.S. Open. A lot more intriguing than maybe what I thought it was going to be heading in after the second round.
It's always intriguing. Because the U.S. Open, traditionally, that Saturday is probably some of the best golf that you're going to see, or at least some of the most exciting golf.
Oh, and they were crushing it.
Because it's all over the place. Tiger, I've said this before on these very airwaves. You can hope and you can wish that Tiger Woods is going to be the early 2000s Tiger. And I know everyone got filled with all that hope that that's what was going to happen after he won the Masters. But the man is over the age of 40. Mm-hmm. He's had chronic back, knee, and elbow issues. He's not golfing every tournament. There's nothing that suggests in his game that he's going to be dominating. Now, will he still win majors? Yes, he showed that. He proved that in Augusta at the Masters. But we saw him miss the cut at the PGA. And we saw him be distant. He wasn't even a factor this weekend at Pebble Beach. Of course, he plays extremely well and knows like the back of his hand.
Yeah.
Still wasn't a factor. Everyone has to kind of get to the point of, yes, it's great that Tiger's in the mix, and it's great when he makes the cut, but he's not the best golfer in the world. He's just not, and he's not going to be, but he can still be a factor and still be one of the best in game. He's just not the best. He just isn't. That title belongs to Brooks Koepka. Brooks has shown that over the course of the last 2.5 years that he is the best golfer. Better than Rory, better than Jordan. He's far more consistent than those guys. Other guys have stepped up and won majors, Patrick Reed, Justin Thomas, everything like that. Those are good golfers. The only one that is remotely on Koepka's level when it comes to dominance is probably Rory when Rory is on. But the problem with Rory the last 2.5 years is there's no consistency.
Yep.
There's no consistency with him whatsoever. So I still think it's Brooks. I'm going to be pumped to see what happens at the Open Championship this year, because even though the course may not lend itself to Brooks Koepka in his game, I still think that it's going to be interesting. It's going to be in Northern Ireland, okay? The Open is going to make its historic return to Northern Ireland this year. It's golf's oldest and most international championship. Returns after 68 years. Okay, so none of these guys, unless they're European Tour players and maybe have played a tournament there, a minor tournament, have no idea what they're walking into. But they're going to be playing in Northern Ireland there at Royal Portrush. I think it's going to be phenomenal. I like Rory there. I like Brooks Koepka. And who knows? Can Ricky Fowler, Jordan Spieth, and the other guys get it together? Maybe Tiger? I don't know. But it'll definitely be interesting to see what's going to happen there in July 18th through the 21st as the fourth of the four majors is played there at Royal Portrush in Northern Ireland. 68 years since the claret jug has been up for grabs there. Should be interesting. And I always love watching that because I love watching golfers have to deal with the crosswinds at those old links courses like that and have no idea. And they hit the ball and it's in a bunker that's 8 feet deep and the rough is 3 feet tall and it's all brown and looks dead. And you just see the golfer just look at it and go, I have no idea what to do here. They just look to the caddy and the caddy just goes, I don't know. Let's go get a Guinness. When we come back here on the Jody Holberg Show, we'll wrap up hour number one in style right here on 103.7 The Game.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Holberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
Welcome back to the Jordy Holtberg Show here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. I'm your guest host, Raymond Parsha III, a.k.a. The Bald Bomber, filling in for Uncle Jordy today as he takes the day off. Uncle Jordy will be back on tomorrow, live and direct, right here on 103.7 The Game. If you'd like to give us a call, talking New Orleans Pelicans trading Anthony Davis to the Los Angeles Lakers or about the U.S. Open, feel free. Dial up the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. So I want to touch on something. This news happened today. It's a sad day. It's a sad day, world famous. You want to know why?
Yeah, I'm interested to know why, actually.
One of the greatest clipboard-holding quarterbacks that made a career out of doing nothing.
Doing nothing at all.
A McCown.
Wait. You mean
the McCown retired.
The McCown legacy, as we know it.
That's right. Josh McCown. Josh McCown lasted in the National Football League 17 years.
Sixteen of which were holding a clipboard.
He turns 40 this 4th of July. He spent the last two seasons with the New York Jets. Made the decision to retire after consulting with his family for the last few months. McCown, for his career, threw for 17,000 yards, 98 touchdown passes, 82 interceptions, and had a passer rating of 79.7. Josh McCown, ladies and gentlemen, has retired.
Finally. Our long national nightmare is over.
Has retired. It's one heck of a journey for him.
Is he a Hall of Famer?
I can't even formulate the words to respond to that. Now, if you remember, the McCown, as I call him, he played college football at both SMU before transferring to Sam Houston State. He's from Texas. He went to Jacksonville High School there in Texas. He was a stud coming out of high school. East Tex Player of the Year, All-State honors. He played three seasons for SMU, and he did fairly well. Well, his interception to touchdown ratio is not good, 27-34. But he played his final season at Sam Houston, where he lit it up and was named the Southland Football League Player of the Year. He was a third-team All-American. He was actually drafted in the third round by the Arizona Cardinals.
Man, the Arizona Cardinals just don't know how to draft quarterbacks, do they?
They do a poor job of drafting quarterbacks. They do a better job of signing veteran aging quarterbacks that they can get the best out of.
Yeah.
Carson like Palmer, the 1 year. Kurt Warner.
Yeah, Kurt Warner. Remember the time that the Saints ended his career?
Yes.
Nobody talks about that. Everybody talks about Brett Favre, but that one was worse. That one was just, ugh.
McCown played for the Cardinals, the Lions, the Raiders, the Dolphins, the Panthers, the Hartford Colonels.
Wait, who?
Yes, the Hartford Colonials. Sorry, I stand.
Was that CFL?
Maybe. I don't even know.
That sounds like almost like one of the teams Jake DeLone played in that year he was with NFL Europe.
San Francisco 49ers, the Bears, the Bucks, the Browns. God bless him. You know what? Good for him.
That's the United Football League. It's like they were originally the New York Sentinels, which reminds me of the Replacements.
Josh McCown. That man played 17 years in the NFL.
All right, so you say
Good for him. I'm going to give it up. That man got money. Yeah. That man made a career. He lasted nearly two decades in the NFL. I ain't throwing shade at him. Good for him. He hustled. Because no one was the better backup quarterback than the McCown.
All right, one more fun fact about the Hartford Colonials.
I'm ready for fun facts.
They only lasted 2 years, so it's safe to say Josh McCown not only just ruined that franchise, he helped be a big part of it folding. The next 30 for 30 is Josh McCown ruining the Hartford Colonials.
Yeah, I like that. Damn McCown.
What if I told you that one quarterback can change a franchise from existing to not existing?
Now, you know, he is the older brother of former Saints backup Luke McCown.
The best backup of all time.
And former Louisiana Tech quarterback.
Yep.
So those McCown brothers, they can chuck the football. And Luke had himself a heck of a... He lasted more than a decade, too, as a backup quarterback.
Yeah.
The McCown family providing you backup quarterbacks for nearly 20 years. You're welcome. And Josh outlasted his younger brother. His younger brother didn't come into the league until 2004. And yet, he outlasted his... You know he's going to hold that against him. He's like, bro, I'm older than you, and I stuck around longer. I mean, come on. What's
and
your deal?
Then the comeback is you destroyed a whole football team.
That's right. Luke McCown was with the Saints twice, 2012 and then 2013-16. So no more McCowns in the NFL. It's a sad day. We'll wrap up hour number one here on the Jordy Holtberg Show with your guest host, Raymond Parsons III. When we come back, we got hot topics. We got an interview coming up with the Bird Rights, Ali Cazell as well, talking the Anthony Davis trade, plus that and much, much more right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Holtberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Holtberg.
Good afternoon and welcome to Hour 2 of the Jordy Holtberg Show with your guest host, the Ball Bomber himself, Raymond Parsons III, right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can give us a call if you'd like today, 337-706-0111. That's the ARCO Equipment Hotline. We started off leading off today's show, talking, of course, Anthony Davis, traded from the New Orleans Pelicans to the Los Angeles Lakers. In return, they get three players. The Pels do Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, and Josh Hart. They also get three first-round picks, which the Pelicans get to control, including the number 4 overall pick this year, Thursday night. We'll talk more about that in this hour with Ali Cazell of the Bird's Rights, part of SB Nation. He's going to be joining us at 3:32, so make sure to tune in for that. But right now, ladies and gentlemen, it's welcome to Hour 2 time here on the Jordy Holtberg Show, which means it's time to take a walk around the sports water cooler. CD, hit it, my friend.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
What is going on, Raymond? It is a, man, great Monday. Great way to kind of recap the weekend that was. I think what I got to say first off, man, is just how we can talk about the Anthony Davis trade in a little bit. We can talk about the U.S. Open a little bit. What about the U.S. Women's National Team looking real good to kind of start things off 2-0, clinching a group of 16 spot? I mean, that was definitely a pretty good way to start things off, 13-0 against Thailand, then wound up looking really good against Chile, 3-0.
My main question, though, world famous, was everyone okay with their celebration? Because, obviously, that became the national conversation on how the women's national team was celebrating beating up on Thailand, because that was needed.
They did golf.
We wasted. There was time wasted on that.
They did golf claps.
They did golf claps against Chile?
Oh, trust me. They were very much aware of what they were doing whenever they were celebrating.
You see, that's even worse because Chile knows that they're doing that on purpose. So they're doing the little golf clap, just mocking the whole process. That actually makes it worse. So because everyone was outraged over them scoring a bunch of goals and celebrating on the World Cup stage. Whatever.
They didn't celebrate nearly as much. But again, it's also the fact that they didn't score 13 goals. But it's just like, come on, guys. Like, these are probably the same people who are complaining about this are the same people who complain about people flipping the bat after a home run. They're probably the Madison Bumgarners of the world. who don't want to see people flip bats. Just go ahead.
If you don't want to see someone flip the bat after hitting a home run off of you,
go get it.
Don't give up the home run
exactly.
Pitch. Real simple.
Go get it out of McCovey Cove.
But yes, congratulations to the U.S. Women's National Team. They are the proverbial favorite to win the World Cup.
Yep.
Okay. They are led by Alex Morgan, one of the best athletes on the face of the planet.
Carly Lloyd
had a huge match against Chile. And look, respect to Chile. That goalkeeper for them was phenomenal. She gave up some goals, but she kept the U.S. Women's National Team out of the back of the net a lot more. That could have been a lopsided score.
Oh, I mean, Julia Ertz even had a great moment. How about that? You had Zach Ertz being able to take time off to go watch his wife play in the U.S. Women's National Team in the Women's World Cup in France.
Yes, and I'm glad Zach Ertz has accepted the fact that he's not the best athlete in his own household, because she is an absolute monster.
Yeah. Oh, dude, she's
out on the pitch. And Zach is a very good Pro Bowl caliber tight end. But if we're going to, you know, you're going to look back and you're going to see that she's probably was the better athlete. But women's national team, are they going to be stopped? They got to the round of 16. I don't see anyone in this field that is on the same level. The U.S. women's national team, if they lose, they will beat themselves with just poor execution and maybe some mental errors. There's not another team in the field of this World Cup that's better than them. There just isn't.
We'll see, because you got to think about like all the European teams that are going to be out there. I know England's going to wind up probably trying to play. A lot of them are going to try and play spoiler. But it's going to be fun once we get into the group of 16 play. We got to wait until Thursday now to see.
If the U.S. women's team plays up to their potential, they won't lose.
Okay.
That I guess that's my bigger point, world famous, is that if they play to their potential, no one can beat them.
They're like LeVar Ball, never lost.
Oh, never lost. Never lost.
LeVar Ball, having fun as always. And he was actually on First Take this morning talking about how he always wanted Lonzo Ball on the Pelicans. I actually got the soundbite right here, and it's amazing.
Okay.
Exactly what I wanted to do. Best teams he going to play on is New Orleans. Great. With him at the one, Aaron at the two, Ingram at the three, Zion at the four,
Ingram with
Julius at the five. You get my boy to running teams like that, we're going to run loose.
Does he know that Julius Randle turned down his player option?
Does he also know that Drew Holiday is not Aaron Holiday?
Yeah.
Because he called him Aaron.
Yeah. You done messed up, Aaron.
LeVar don't know that Julius Randle turned him down and that Drew Holiday's name is, in fact, not Aaron Holiday. It is Drew Holiday. But, hey, we'll give LeVar, you know, look, he was stunned by the news. I love the video that someone just rolled up to him outside of a gym, and it's blustering outside, and went and just some random guy with an iPhone is like, hey, give us your thoughts. And he's like,
I said, I guarantee, like I say again, it'll be the worst move the Lakers ever did in their life, and they'll never win another championship. Guaranteed.
God, the wind in there was just whipping in that one. My goodness.
But the wind, the natural element, was no match for the hot air coming out of LeVar Ball's mouth.
Oh, yeah. LeVar was just bringing
it. Oh, they're not going to win another championship. Come on, man.
I'm like, now they're going to win seven. Watch the Lakers just like build a dynasty on LeBron James in like his tail end of his career and Anthony Davis.
If I'm torn here, CD, because if the Pels can trade Lonzo Ball on that number four pick and get a player like Bradley Beal and an all-star caliber player that can help them become a playoff team right off the bat, you want that just be based on what the product will be on the court, right?
Uh-huh.
But, man, I'm all in for the entertainment that will be LeVar Ball in New Orleans. Part of me just wants to see that absolute train wreck unfold in front of us.
I want to see it as well, but I just don't want it to be like, because you notice how LeVar, like not long after one of the ball boys just pretty much got drafted, he very much stepped away from like the limelight. The second his boy gets traded, he is just all over the place. It's like welcome back, LeVar. Let's have some fun and pour some gasoline on this fire right now. And
he doesn't care. But here's the thing also.
Yeah.
It's one thing to do that in the L.A. market.
Yep.
right? Because they're from L.A. He went to UCLA. He somehow convinced the Lakers to take his boy high in the draft, and he was a Laker.
Well,
it's one thing to have that media market to do your thing. It's another thing to be in New Orleans, which is one of the smallest TV markets in the country.
Yep.
And he'll be wildly kind of ignored in a lot of ways, too. So that's another thing that's kind of, you know, his shenanigans will get some run, but not as much as it would be if his boy stayed in Los Angeles.
So what you're saying is LeVar Ball will not be welcome on RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game.
I would have LeVar Ball sit next to me live in this studio all day long. We would dedicate a whole hour of just LeVar Ball.
3 hours.
Just talking nonsense. And I'd eat it up. We'd take phone calls. It'd be great. Tim would call in. It'd be tremendous.
Yeah, and just make sure not to ask him about that time he was on Monday Night Raw and that whole situation.
That's one of my favorite gifts of all time. Where he's walking down. I don't know. What was he doing? He was.
It was right before his son got drafted. He just running out of the ring and almost, like, broke his legs. See, like, his just running is amazing.
It's outstanding.
It really is. It really is. But, of course, I want to talk a little bit about the U.S. Open. This is kind of what I wanted to tease here. Just looking at how things were, you almost had the three-peat of Brooks Koepka for the first time since, like, 1903. Somebody actually done this.
Yes, the Terminator.
The Terminator. And you want to Brooks Koepka almost win it. But it's Gary Woodland, the Cinderella story out of nowhere, Bill Murray style.
Yes.
Which one would you have, like, hypothetically, which one would you have rather have seen? History be made or a guy like Gary Woodland coming out of nowhere winning?
Dominance is always, you're always torn on this, whether it's the Cinderella story or a dominant team or a dynasty, right? So you could also apply this to the NBA Finals I wrapped up last week. You know, what's better, the Raptors winning with Kawhi Leonard and winning their first ever Larry O'Brien trophy by making it to their first finals against the team trying to win three in a row? It really depends on what you prefer. Now, if Gary turns into a dynamic player that's going to be competing for major championships and that story can continue, that will be the better story. But if it's a one and done like a Danny Willett, okay, that he just wins a major and then he disappears and he's not a factor and he goes back to being on the fringes of even diehard golf fans knowing who he is, then the better story would have been Koepka winning three.
Yeah.
Plus, it would have been so historic that a player like that, that's something Tiger never accomplished, is winning
Jack
three
never
straight.
Did.
Right.
A lot of the legends, I mean, you think about it, like, the guy who did it, this was back in the early 1900s.
Arnold Palmer, Seve, none of those guys did it.
Trevino.
Right. So, Nick Faldo, none of those guys did it. So, to have that happen would have been probably more historic, more impressive. And once again, they kept messing up his name. Even during the telecast, someone referred to him not as Brooks Koepka. It was like, yeah, Bruce Koepka. I'm like, really? Really? What are you doing? You can't get the guy's name right?
I feel like some people are just starting to take advantage of what Stephen A. Smith did with the Hunter Henry and him messing all that up. Be like, you know what? We're just going to have free range to just butcher people's names left and right, and it's sad.
I have one for you.
Okay, go ahead.
Do we have time?
Yeah, no, we have plenty of time, bro.
Oh, we're playing it fast and loose here on the Jordy Holberg Show with your guest host, Raymond
Parsons. It's a real improvisational tone.
It came out earlier today, that your boy, first-year Arizona Cardinals head coach.
Yeah.
Former Texas Tech head coach.
Cliff Kingsbury.
Yes, the Cliffer has used female social accounts to spy on players. This is the report.
I passed over this on Saturday's show, and I'm disappointed, so let's go.
Cliff Kingsbury is monitoring your every move if he still employs the same Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram strategy that became commonplace during his time at Texas Tech as a college head coach. In a three-year-old story that came to light again this week via azcentral.com, as the Cardinals wrapped up minicamp, Kingsbury's means to spy on his players at Texas Tech was that he used fake accounts, quote-unquote,
yeah,
cute girl accounts, and admitted as much on a podcast hosted by AJ Hawk. Quote, he said, we have fake accounts with cute girls as they add right now so we can see what's going on, who's tweeting what, Kingsbury said during an appearance on the Hawkcast back in 2016. Those are heavily monitored for sure.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on a head coach using fake accounts, essentially catfishing his own players to monitor what they're doing on social media? What do you think about that?
Did he at one point or another? Did he ever coach for Notre Dame? I mean, seriously, it's just ridiculous to see this whole thing. I saw this, I believe, like Friday night or early Saturday morning before Under the Dome got started, and it was definitely in the playlist of like stuff that was going to be discussed, but it kind of just fell to the wayside once I saw a article from Ken Rosenthal talking about how home runs are ruining baseball and get out of here with that mess. But I absolutely love that idea, and I'm surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if more head coaches are doing that, especially the younger head coaches.
But you have to divvy that up to like the student assistant, right?
Oh yeah,
it's like the guy getting his master's degree. You want to earn your keep? You have to create all these social media fake accounts and catfish our own players to make sure they're not up to no good on social media.
I feel like he has to control those hypothetically. I feel like if you put that in the hands of somebody not like you have somebody with the sports athletic department or whatever, you could probably wind up getting a lot of trouble for it. Especially if they find out. Like, you know, somebody would probably like spill the beans if it was somebody within the athletic department. So I feel like it was all Cliff Kingsbury. The man probably was like running TweetDeck, like and it was 20 like fake female accounts, and just watching this entire thing go down. All the burner accounts were on that TweetDeck.
Oh,
I hope that's exactly what happened.
Well, I'm glad he used it to monitor his players. It didn't help him win games. So
yeah, well, you know,
well, but yeah, I mean, can you just? I mean, just like yeah, and all these guys are like, oh man, look at this. Oh man, she's hot. She's interested in me. She sent me a message. She wants to follow me. I'm going to follow her back. And I want to go back through.
Her DMs are open.
And see what the conversation was like. Was he just shadowing them, or was he actually interacting with his own players through a fake account as a woman?
I hope that's what this was. Like him, like at least one of the players he was doing is like one of the players he knew he was just going to rib the entire time, like Manti Te'o, and just catfish it and just legitimately and just mess with him. Until they realize that this is a fake person, because they like any smart person would hit up the Google machine and search like stock photo of attractive woman, and it'd probably be like the top 10 results. And you're like, oh, this is coach. Is this coach?
The woman on the other end, the fake account, is just asking questions about the playbook. Oh, yeah. did you remember where that wheel route goes?
What are your intangibles?
Oh, it could be so much
fun. It'd be great, you know. What's your explosive dislike?
We need a transcript.
This could be a whole segment and a half here.
This could be a 30 for 30.
Oh no, this would just be an entire segment of like you just trying to come up with ways of like trying to figure out what the DMs were.
We gotta hit a break. You're listening to the Jordy Holberg Show with guest host Raymond Parts III right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Holberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back to the Jordy Holberg Show with guest host Raymond Parts III here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live today from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Uncle Jordy will be back tomorrow, live and direct here, 2 to 4. Not to forget, coming up, we're going to be talking with Ali Kazel from the Birds Rights about the Anthony Davis trade to the Los Angeles Lakers. That'll be coming up here at 3:32. But before we get back to the AD trade talk, I want to talk a little bit about Austin Nola. Older brother, of Aaron Nola. Both played at LSU for Paul Menary. Aaron, we know, has become an all-star. Austin was a journeyman in the minor leagues. But the young man finally got his first taste of playing in the show yesterday on Father's Day. He'd been with the AAA Tacoma Mariners, Louisiana native had himself a heck of a season so far. Look, he was batting .327 with 36 runs, 15 doubles, and 7 home runs with 37 RBIs in AAA in 55 games. He was playing lights out. But the reason why he got called up over the weekend, Ryan Healy is still on the injured list for the Seattle Mariners, and the Mariners over the weekend traded American League home run leader Edwin
Encarnacion
to the New York Yankees. So on Saturday night, they called him up. He flew from Austin, Texas to the Bay Area because the Mariners were playing at Oakland. And in front of more than 30,000 people there inside Oakland Coliseum, he got his first taste of big league action, got his first start, and he also got his first hit in his very first plate appearance. So this is a guy who spent 8 years, eight years in the minor league system. He was selected in the 31st round by the Toronto Blue Jays back in the 2011 draft, the former LSU star. In 8 seasons, he's played in 773 minor league ball games.
Several with the baby cakes.
He did not expect a call up when signing with Seattle. They simply did it for depth purposes. And yet the young man, former LSU star, finally broke through on Father's Day. Nonetheless, his family was in the stands. He got a hit in his very first at bat. Now that is a Cinderella story. That is a great story. And diligence, man, look, 8 years of being in the minors and never getting called up, you have to think doubt was creeping in.
Oh, exactly.
Over the years, world famous, and he kept at it and kept positive and kept motivated, and sure enough, he got his chance, and he gets up there, very first at bat, Austin Nola gets himself a hit. Your thoughts?
I mean, you hear about it all the time, especially when you talk to ex-minor leaguers, kind of when you knew your time was up. Usually after about year three or year four, you know that you're probably not going to make the show, and that's how it is for the most part. Like after about 4 or 5 years, after being on the road for so long, especially with a guy like this, a guy like Austin Nola, who's been with several different organizations, both in terms of like classification and through kind of the trades in the world of Major League Baseball, eventually there's a breaking point, and you say, you know what, I'd much rather move on with my life, focus on my family, and be able to move forward and have things go right for me. And again,
and this is a guy who helped LSU win the College World Series.
Yeah.
Okay, and he was on that team. He was a freshman shortstop on that team.
Yep.
And he did his part, and he helped his team win a College World Series and still got drafted, and yet he just toiled in the minors, man. And he just, team from team, he had to make a change. He went from an infielder to a catcher. Can you imagine being a shortstop, second baseman, and like, hey, by the way, we need you to learn how to play catcher?
It's a transition, not going to lie. I mean, we could probably talk with him. I mean, you know, you got Drew Bianco. He definitely was supposedly going to be learning how to be a catcher during the offseason with the Baton Rouge Rougarou, according to what Paul Maneri said last week during his exit interviews. But that didn't necessarily work out, which honestly feels like a smart move. But again, it shows how much you had to kind of like change things on a day-to-day basis in the world of baseball. And it's great to kind of have a guy like Austin Nola take that in stride, because anybody could have been like, you want me to be a catcher after all these years of being an infielder? I'm out. You know, he took it in stride and learned.
And he's got an opportunity here. Seattle signed him to be a backup. But he's got an opportunity here with the trade of Encarnacion to the Yankees. And the other guy being injured. He's got a chance now to prove that he belongs at the big league level, even if it's not with Seattle. He's got an opportunity. That's going to do it here. We got to hit a break, but when we come back, Ali Kazel of the Bird Rights joins us to talk the Anthony Davis trade right here on the Jordy Holberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Holberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back to the Jordy Holberg Show with your guest host, Raymond Parsh III, right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. It's time now for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline as we welcome on today's guest. He's a contributor for the Bird Rights. It's the one and only Ali Kozel. Ali, how are you doing this morning? Or afternoon,
rather.
Sorry.
I'm doing great, but boy, am I busy because there's a little bit to talk about.
Just a little bit. Let's get right to it. It broke over the weekend. We expected David Griffin, reports had coming out that he was going to be aggressive. He was going to try to get a deal done before the draft. Your thoughts on what the Pels got in return for Anthony Davis, and more importantly, all those picks and the fact that they have control over them, which is the most interesting thing to me. Ollie, your thoughts on the Anthony Davis trade to the Los Angeles Lakers?
Yeah, that draft pick compensation takes this anywhere from a B or a C to an A in my mind. As we've learned now, and we were hearing this at the times of the negotiations, but teams are not willing to pony up. You know, Denver Nuggets did not want to include Jamal Murray. The Boston Celtics didn't want to include Jason Tatum, Brown, and the Memphis pick altogether. Even I've heard two of those assets together. So Griffin was down there scraping the bottom of the barrel trying to figure out how he can maximize his value. When the Lakers came calling in, he squeezed them for everything they're worth. You know, Lonzo Ball, Ingram, we know their stories. They're both talented young 21-year-olds who have injury histories and a lot of other significant weaknesses. But the fact that he was able to not only take a chance on these guys, but add a whole lot of, you know, attractive assets, that's really the home run here. And like I said, that's what takes this to an A grade, because they do control the Laker assets for, as we've seen, the Lakers are anything but a guarantee to be, you know, a championship contender year after year. They haven't been to playoffs in 6 years. LeBron James, by the time the Pelicans are done sucking these assets out from L.A., he'll be 40 years old, if he even makes it that far. Because his minutes, he's only about fifth or sixth, I think, on the list from passing the number one leader, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And he's, you know, they're thinking he's going to pass in the next couple of years. So they say a lot of miles is what counts, not your age, which he's 34, but it's the miles. So they might just be stuck with Anthony Davis, and therefore that's what Griffin counted on. And the Pelicans could obviously grab a windfall.
We're talking with Ollie Kozel of the Bird Rights here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Ollie, explain to me the dates here, because that came out also over the weekend. The July 6th deadline, which is what the Pels want this trade to go through. But how in the world did the Lakers agree to this, knowing that this is going to lock up even more cap space? They don't get as much cap space by doing it on July 6th as they would later in July, and they put themselves back themselves up in a corner by doing this. How did that happen?
Well, you got to understand their vantage point. They just went through one of the worst seasons ever, and literally everybody looked horrible in it. You know, Magic Johnson even quit. Rob Pelinka has done a number on his image, as well as Jeannie Buss. So they needed to agree to almost anything Griffin said, and if they heard any rumors or thought that they may not get Anthony Davis, well, that wasn't even an option. So that's why they jumped as high as Griffin asked them to. I don't find this cap space as big of an issue as maybe some others. You're still going to have $23 million in space instead of the requisite around 32 to sign somebody that's, you know, 7 to 9 years in the league to a max contract. Look, I don't think they were going to get another top free agent anyway to L.A. If Kyrie Irving didn't say yes, then I'm almost positive nobody else would have gone. And we saw that last summer. So I think what they want more than anything was to get Anthony Davis, and now they have to just worry about surrounding that team, and those two in particular, with a whole bunch of shooters. Because as we saw last year, LeBron didn't have enough.
Ollie, here's the other thing that if I'm a Lakers fan, I worry about. We've seen in the modern NBA, it's not only about the star power that you have, your big threes and whatnot. It's about having depth. If you look at the Miami Heat, they had Ray Allen. They had Birdman. They had Haslam. They had Mario Chalmers. They had a slew of guys, Miller. They had a slew of other guys that came in and contributed. We just saw the Raptors do the same thing, beating the Warriors because they had more depth. The Warriors have had a slew of depth during their title run. With the salaries that they're going to have and what they're going to have to pay LeBron James and AD, and if they get another guy, whatnot, how are they going to have enough money to be able to get depth on this team? Because they can't trot out the guys they did last year, right? JaVale McGee, Rajon Rondo, and Lance Stephenson didn't get the job done. So I understand they got AD, and that's a big win, but who else are they going to get to be able to surround those guys with?
Yeah, I can foresee Rondo coming back. I mean, he likes Anthony Davis. He liked what happened. He liked his, what they were kind of building out in L.A. So I don't imagine anybody else grabbing Rondo. But outside of that, you're right. They're going to have a tough time filling out roster. their hope, I think, is they're going to go for that Golden State Warrior model, that old San Antonio model, where you're going to pay some veterans that want to just end up and trying winning a ring is basically a realistic scenario, right? So they're going to be chasing those type of guys just to fill out the roster. They may, like you said, land one more legitimate long-term contract, a good free agent. But other than that, they're going to have to plug in those holes with guys that have been in the league and that want to play under LeBron with AD and understand their roles. Usually that's not the young guys. But like I said, I'm looking for the Kyle Korvers, the Rondos, those type of guys to say yes. And you know what? I don't know if that's going to be enough. But luckily for them, this West is going to be wide open, right? Where Golden State Warriors are not going to be that same team. Who knows what Houston's going to look like. So the Lakers have a legitimate chance. I think that's what they're banking on, guys. Had it been a different maybe scenario, maybe Pelinka wouldn't have agreed to as much. But his first and only really option was to land Anthony Davis.
We're talking with Ollie Kozel of the Bird Rights here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Let me ask you, let's flip it and focus in on the Pels here, because that's the team that we really kind of care about. So they get Lonzo Ball, they get Brandon Ingram, and they get Josh Hart. I'm really high on Josh Hart. I just am personally. I think he can be a terrific, if developed, a terrific two-way player in this league. I just think he has the skill set. Of the three guys, who do you think can be the biggest contributor right off the bat for this team, based on what we've seen with other Laker players do once they leave L.A. and Magic Johnson and Pelinka and all those guys think they're garbage, and yet you see Julius Randle become almost a double-double player for the Pels, and you see D'Angelo Russell go to the Nets and become an all-star and a guy that can lead a team to the playoffs. Of the three guys that are coming to New Orleans, let's say they keep all three, and I know that's a big if, who are you the most high on of those three?
The numbers are going to come from Ingram, but I like the impact that Lonzo Ball is going to bring. And, you know, nearly about a month before this Anthony Davis trade request even became public, a few of us had a conversation with Alvin Gentry on the side just talking about Lonzo, and he really liked him back then. He thought that he could be a franchise cornerstone at point guard, you know, despite his limitations that we currently see, the injuries, the inability to shoot the ball. But he's thought of that highly because of his ability to facilitate, and his defense, I think, is really vastly underrated. So we saw what Gentry was able to do with a Rondo that's kind of over the hill, that kind of didn't really try on defense anymore. Well, suddenly Gentry gets young legs, provided they're healthy, of course, but he gets those young legs to run his offense again. Plus, he's going to have another great defender alongside Drew Holiday. So I think that Lonzo, with what he brings now to the table, his ability, like I said, to provide in those two areas, I think that's what's we're going to see that initial impact to be greatest. Because Ingram still needs to learn how to shoot the ball. We're not even sure if his blood clot's going to be a limitation. And, of course, this is my biggest worry about Ingram. He can put points up, that's for sure, but it's the ability to play within a team concept. Because last year I saw a lot of isolation ball out of him, and there's been a lot of talk that he is kind of following maybe that Carmelo Anthony path. I'm hoping not. I'm hoping everybody's wrong. I mean, he's 21. His path hasn't been carved out yet, but I've got my money on Ball, but you're right. Hart is a good player. He's going to be a great, maybe a six-man role for the Pelicans this year.
Ollie, tell me a little bit about it. There's been a lot of reports coming out, including you guys, that say, you know, they're probably going to be taking that number four pick instead of drafting someone. They're going to try to flip it. This is what Griffin's done in the past. His first year there, when he took over as general manager in Cleveland, was what? He traded Wiggins to Minnesota Timberwolves to get Kevin Love. Now, there's no one on the market that he can get that's big. I know a lot of people have been talking Bradley Beal. We would obviously love that, as anyone that roots for the Pels, to see that kind of him and Drew Holiday play together. But is there another name out there, maybe someone that's a little under the radar that could bring kind of all-star level talent? I know you guys are there on the birdrights.com. Aaron Gordon. Could that be a possibility that they could maybe flip, maybe trade the pick and maybe another player to get someone like Aaron Gordon to come in?
Yeah, that's what the hope is, and I know that that's what Griffin wants, because what he thought out of the Anthony Davis trade was bringing in a legitimate all-star or a guy that's going to win, be in a bunch of all-star games in the future, right? Somebody with that type of potential, and he didn't get that back with the Lakers. There was a lot more question marks with Ball and Ingram, so that's what I heard he's chasing. I've heard that maybe Beal is in play, obviously. I heard that just a couple of days ago, but it's nice to see that's being corroborated today, like by Shams Charney of Athletic and a few others. But if not him, I've heard that maybe Markkanen could be had. You know, they may not see him as a good fit next to Wendell Carter up in Chicago. And, boy, I think that would be the perfect fit for Zion.
Oh,
you
wow.
Want a guy that can spread the floor, right? That can shoot the three along Zion. So maybe him. And you, as you mentioned already, Aaron Gordon. Though, guys, I'll be honest. If I had to put my money on something, I don't think they'll be able to land one of those guys, even though they have a bunch of assets. I'm more looking that they're going to pull off a deal with this number four pick, kind of like what we saw with Atlanta and Dallas last year, where Dallas really wanted Luka Doncic, and they paid a heavy price, a future first-round pick, just to move up two spots. I can foresee Chicago, Phoenix, a team that really needs a point guard, doing the same this year.
So you're thinking that they would build up maybe a future pick, maybe not necessarily a player right now, but maybe right. Just trade the pick and get more picks moving forward just to kind of continue laying a foundation to build around Zion.
Yeah, because I think the way they're viewing this draft, there's two stars. There's Zion and there's Morant. Outside of that, then there's just a lot of good players, but they can also just be role players, right? We're not even certain they're going to be good starters on a good team. So I think that's the way the Pelicans are viewing it. So we're already grabbing Zion. We've got a second-round pick. Let's not grab all these rookies at once. Let's just have future assets that we can either draft in a better draft or flip those for a good young star down the road and build our team that way, because nobody's in a rush here. That's something that we have to remember. Even though Griffin wants it to be competitive, he still wants to build the best possible team that he can. If those pieces aren't out there, then he's just going to wait until they are.
We're talking with Ollie Kozel of the Bird Rights here on the Arco Equipment Hotline. I have to ask you, I know Julius Randle opted out. Look, he played better than his contract, so it makes smart. It's a smart business decision for him to say, hey, I'm going to test free agency and see what I'm worth. After the Lakers kind of made it out like he was garbage, and then he ended up actually being a good player. Maybe not an all-star, but a good player. Any chance Randle tests free agency, but the Pels and the front office under David Griffin likes him enough to bring him back?
I think he would like him enough. I know the coaching staff really liked Randle. He had a good motor, and offensively, he was fantastic. Right? He can play make for his size, get you the points, the rebounds, and find those open teammates for assists. And I feel like he'd be a good role model, which is something Nancy Lieberman told me when we brought her on as a podcast, that she thinks that that's what Zion could use, you know, have a guy that he can look up to coming into this league, which is a real man's league. And there's nobody better than really somebody that kind of fits your image and build and how they play the game than Julius Randle. But that said, there's going to be a ton of teams out there with money in this free agency willing to throw it at these players, and I've got a feeling that Randle's going to command, you know, anywhere from $18 million on up per year, and I think that alone is going to price them out of Griffin's price range. Pelicans are going to have about $18 to $20 million in cap space, barring, of course, any other moves they make, but right now that's the way it's shaping up to be, and I just can't foresee him spending it on a player that's already going to that Zion Williamson is supposed to fill in, right? That point forward at that number four, when this team needs so many other poles plugged in, like a big man, like a lot more shooting. So, unfortunately, I think Randle's going to be moving on.
Ollie, what about Elfrid Payton? That's a name that's near and dear to listeners here in Acadiana, a former Raging Cajun star. He played well, had all those triple-doubles when he's healthy. Mm-hmm. And I know, you know, he's going to be a free agent. You know, he's a guy that I know Coach Gentry liked, and all the reports were that he was kind of well-liked in the locker room. Any possibility that they could be bringing back Elfrid Payton?
I think so. And the reason I say this is because before last year, he was supposed to be the backup to Rondo before he suddenly jetted for L.A. unexpectedly in the last minute. And therefore, Elfrid was thrust into that starting role. I still think Elfrid makes for one of the best backups, and I think that's what general managers view him as. Even though he had that nice string of triple-doubles, it didn't lead to winning. He didn't really impact the game the way you want to see out of a star point guard. But he's still young. He's 25. And like you've mentioned, yeah, he loves the city, and we all love him, you know, including the guys who cover this beat inside that locker room. He's a great guy. He's open. He's a smart, intelligent guy who wants to stay, I think, in the city. It's all going to come down to him. Will he price himself out of this New Orleans market? Because I don't foresee them wanting to pay for a backup point guard anymore, say $3 or $4 million a year. If he can get that more from another team and he wants the money over staying in New Orleans, then, you know, that's the way it's going to end up. So if he agrees to come back for a price that he just got paid for this past year, then he'll come back. There's a good chance, I should say, he could come back.
Ollie, what happened with the Boston Celtics? I know a lot of people thought that was going to be the trade destination. They lose Kyrie. He decides not to go back, or, you know, he's weighing his options, rather. Reports are they were wanting to get Anthony Davis, that they were willing to trade Jason Tatum. Hell, during the season, Tatum even commented on that rumor and said that he wouldn't mind playing in New Orleans. And when it all came down to it, they wanted to hold on to Tatum no matter what, right? He was never on the table. Is that how that went down?
Well, I heard he was on the table, but they were unwilling to attach other assets. You know, I heard the Pelicans weren't just going to take Jason Tatum and filler. Like, for instance, they were looking to either also getting Jaylen Brown. That meant the future first-round pick, which is highly regarded. But Boston wasn't willing to put two of those three in together, and so that's why that deal never happened. And, you know, I heard rumors of this possibly occurring a couple of weeks ago. When we started getting wind that Kyrie Irving wants to play outside of Boston, that Danny Ainge would smarten up, or I should say that people around him in the front office would tell him, look, you can't sacrifice the future for a one-year rental of Anthony Davis. Even though there was some close to Danny Ainge felt, yes, he's going to push the trigger because he's not a guy who sits around and accepts a first-round exit, a seed, you know, fourth or fifth, and a quick exit out of the playoffs. He's the championship chaser, but there just wasn't enough for him to throw on the wall and present it to David Griffin at the end of the day. Because think about it, all those assets, right, all that potential that 5 years ago Boston was staring at, suddenly they could be left without any of it if AD walks in a year's time.
We're talking with Ollie Kozel of the Bird Rights here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. One more question for you. Of all the teams that were involved in the last, you know, month with everything that's going on with all the trade drama, is there any team that is going to end up being a bigger loser than the New York Knicks? They miss out on Zion. Then Kevin Durant gets injured, and he's not going to be going there. Apparently Kyrie's not going to go there now. He's leaning towards the Nets. They don't get, you know, the overall pick, and then they lose out on trading for Anthony Davis. Any team losing more in this whole ordeal than the New York Knicks?
No, I mean, unless you want to consider maybe where the Boston Celtics kind of fall, but no. I think with everything you just said is the absolute truth. I mean, these guys always enter in off season, and they even traded away Kristaps Porzingis, right?
I know they
were so certain that they were going to have two stars next year, but obviously it didn't pan out. It doesn't look like it's going to pan out that way. Kevin Durant is injured. Kyrie Irving wants to go to their rival, Brooklyn, and AD's off the table. So, yeah, I'm sorry, Knicks fans, but Stephen A. is right to be always so upset nowadays.
More crying from inside his car for Stephen A. Smith is what we can we'll see in the future. Well, Ollie, look, man, I appreciate you making time for us. Tell the folks where they can check out your latest stuff and the blog.
Sure. As you guys could expect, we've got a lot of stuff to talk about. So we've written a lot of articles, putting up something daily, both that and podcast. So please check us out over at www.thebirdrights.com. And be sure to follow us on social media, where we're a pretty big presence on Facebook and on Twitter.
Ollie, appreciate the time, brother. Keep up the good work, and hopefully you'll get some rest this week. Doubtful with the draft being Thursday, but keep up the terrific work, and thanks again once again.
Great. Thanks, guys. Yeah, absolutely.
That's Ollie Kozel of the Bird Rights joining us, breaking down the Anthony Davis trade from the New Orleans Pelicans to the Los Angeles Lakers. That's terrific stuff there. We got to hit a break. When we come back, we will wrap up the Jordy Hullberg Show with guest host Raymond Parsa III.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hullberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back to the Jordy Hullberg Show with your guest host, Raymond Parsa III, right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Keep it live and local right here. The good brother, Ben Love, will be up next, live in studio, host of Bumper to Bumper Sports. I'm going to think, possibly, I'm going on a limb, they may bring up LeVar Ball. Possibly. I'm not for sure. Not for sure. CD, it's that time. For your daily history lesson. It's time for On This Day in Sports History. In 1954, Rocky Marciano defeated Ezard Charles inside Yankee Stadium by a unanimous decision in his third world heavyweight boxing title defense. Of course, Rocky Marciano is one of the greatest of all time. In 1960, on this date, Teddy Ballgame. That's right, Ted Williams. One of the greatest hitters of all time, hit his 500th career home run. In 1962, on this date, Jack Nicklaus won his first major by defeating Arnold Palmer by 3 strokes in an 18-hole playoff at the United States Open at Oakmont Country Club. On this date in 1992, the Philadelphia 76ers, for some god-awful reason, decided to trade the future Hall of Famer and TV personality extraordinaire Charles Barkley to the Phoenix Suns. In 1994, on this date.
That's terrible.
It's terrible. Heisman Trophy winner and Pro Football Hall of Famer O.J. Simpson decided not to turn himself in on murder charges and instead led Los Angeles cops on a memorable chase in his Ford Bronco for more than an hour and a half. And finally, on this date, in 2003, Moneyball, a book about the 2003 Oakland A's and GM Billy Beane's sabermetrics approach, was first published. Happy birthday to you if your today is your birthday, if today is your birthday, rather. You share it with the likes of actor John Grice.
How much you want to make a bet I can throw a football over the mountains?
That's right, Uncle Rico from Napoleon Dynamite. Outstanding. Director-producer Bobby Fairley, of Dumb and Dumber. Hip-hop artist Kendrick Lamar. 5-time Wimbledon champion Venus Williams. Musician and vocal stylist extraordinaire Barry Manilow. That's one of world-famous CD's favorites. And, of course, Oscar-nominated actor Greg Kinnear.
Quit spreading those lies.
You love Barry Manilow.
Nope.
You celebrate the man's entire catalog.
No.
It was terrific filling in for Uncle Jordy. He will be back live on the airwaves tomorrow from 2 to 4 for the Jordy Holberg Show. Ben Love is next, Bumper to Bumper Sports. Y'all have a great day right here on 103.7 The Game.